grab your beverages and turn up your interweb. Solving the world's problems 12 ounces at a time. It's Dudes and Beer. Well, hello everybody, and welcome to episode 257 of the Dudes and Beer podcast, now officially brought to you by PodcastCadet.com. If you're a podcast owner and host like me, trying to take your show to the next level, or someone trying to start a show for your business, church, fun, what have you, feel free to stop on by PodcastCadet.com today. Use the code DUDES20 on your way out the door, and you will save 20% off your entire purchase there. PodcastCadet.com offers some great packages and one-on-one consultation with podcast professionals, everything from editors and designers to producers like me, branding people, social marketing people, all kinds of stuff. So stop on by today. PodcastCadet.com is the website. Dudes and Beer 20. Dudes 20. I forget my own code. Dudes 20 is the code. Save 20%. Our guest tonight, I'm so excited. Elizabeth David Dombrowski with KarenOr.org, as well as Good Counsel Services and Righteous Causes, Inc., is here with us tonight to discuss the state of nonprofits in America, what we can do as average people to help if you're someone who's trying to start a nonprofit, how to start a nonprofit. Also with us, our good friend and regular guest over the last couple few years, Billy Joe Kane from the nonprofit Radical Empathy Education Foundation. Hello, Billy, and hello, Elizabeth. Welcome to the show this evening.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm very glad to be here. And although I'm a chick and I prefer wine, I'm glad to be
That's
on
all right.
and beer. And I'm really enjoying having a beer as we talk. So
absolutely.
About
we're actually enjoying a stronger beverage this evening. We're having a little bit of my dreg bottle. My brother got me into the dreg bottle a year or so ago, and it's just basically an empty bottle that whenever you get to a shot or two left in the bottom of your bottle of whiskey, you just pour it in there. So it ends up making your own blended whiskey.
I think it tastes nice.
This is technically the Dudes and Beer house blend right here from things that I take on the road with me all the time. So that is what we're enjoying tonight. And I'm thoroughly looking forward to enjoying this conversation about nonprofits, helping nonprofits find help. Tell us a little bit, Elizabeth, how it was that you came to be involved with the realm of nonprofit work in your legal career, as well as KarenOr, Inc., Good Counsel Services, and Righteous Causes, Inc.
Thanks. So I came to follow my dream that I had as a little girl of being a lawyer a lot later in life. I had been working after college and volunteering in different places. I had opportunities to volunteer in Central America. I also was involved in the arts and pursued a master's in writing. I had my first novel in New York City called My Monk. And I was really doing a lot of direct service work and social activism. And when I started working for a very large nonprofit and saw the incredible impact that can be done, not only on the streets with a sign, but within an organization with funding and the global work that can be accomplished when you take resources and you redirect them in different important ways. And it was in my time working as a not-for-profit professional that I was inspired in large part by my husband, who encouraged me to pursue my dream, which was to become an attorney, that I started law school at night. And I like to tell this to people whenever I have an opportunity, that I went to law school at night while working full-time over 4 years. And then I took 5 consecutive bar exams, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, California, and Florida. And I'm now admitted in those 5 jurisdictions. And I'm particularly proud of that as someone who didn't have that economic luxury of taking time off. And I tell this not just to get street creds, which it does give me, by the way. So please insert street creds here. But also to tell other people who are thinking about pursuing advanced education, pursuing any education, while having to work. It's not easy, but it's doable if you put one foot in front of the other. And when you asked me about why I decided to do not-for-profit law, initially I was moved because of the work I was doing. I switched employers halfway through my law degree, and I decided to take a position as the executive director of Karen Orr. And we run a center in Jerusalem for children who are blind with multiple disabilities. And when I started doing the work and being the chief executive responsible in New York for all of the fundraising and funding possible for everything that we were doing on the ground in Jerusalem, I realized that the organization was so lean, and that was part of the reason why I came into the leadership position, because I wanted to be in a smaller organization where I knew where every penny was going. It's not to say that I had problems working with a larger organization, but at that point in my career, I wanted to have the buck stop with me. And it was a mixed blessing, because it was hard with very limited resources to try to do a lot of work. And when I realized that we didn't have general counsel, we didn't even have a law firm that we would go to, we would take advice in an ad hoc basis, which I don't think is very healthy for any organization. And that's when I realized that there was a need that was not being met. And I realized, now, I was only looking at New York City where I live and work. But now, having done work over a number of years and realized through the creation of Good Counsel Services, which is also a New York-based not-for-profit, and we provide legal and other support to social impact leaders. And I say social impact leaders because we also help for-profit ventures as well. And that's where the work that I've recently started doing with Righteous Causes comes into play, because Righteous Causes is a benefit corporation that invests in both social impact for-profit companies and donates to not-for-profits and helps support them so that we can amplify their work. Some of the incredible leaders that are doing work both in the social impact for-profit land as well as in the not-for-profit world. And I love being an attorney, and I went to Brooklyn Law School's alumni luncheon a week and a half ago, and I sat at the table and was schmoozing with someone, and he said to me, it's so refreshing to meet an attorney who's happy to be an attorney.
Right.
And I'm thrilled to be one. I love being an attorney because I have opportunities to meet people that are doing incredible work. I mean, the work that you're doing with Radical Empathy is incredible and inspiring to me. And I feel like each day I get called or emailed or introduced to another amazing person doing great work. And it keeps me feeling really energized. It's definitely a financial sacrifice because I'm not, you know, I'm not working as a corporate attorney bringing home that kind of a salary. And yeah. I do my work with Good Counsel almost entirely myself pro bono. Currently, because my hope is that the organization will be able to raise enough funds to be financially sustainable. And I try to practice as much as I can what I preach. And by that, I mean that I try to teach my clients to come up with a financial plan that fits them so that they can not burn out early from their work. And so there's a few different models. Some people have independent wealth or family wealth or have savings that they can afford to go full on in and not take another position.
Yeah.
Other people can find a government grant or an angel investor or donor that will underwrite costs. And others, like in my situation, just simply decide to bootstrap it. In my case, I used my personal credit card to just file for 501c3 status, which for people who don't know, it's actually a reference to the IRS tax code. That references it being federally tax exempt, and there's a process and a procedure and fees involved with that application process. And I took a page out of the traditional entrepreneur, if there's such a thing, in adapting my social entrepreneurship world, in that I wasn't waiting for someone else in the world to give me permission. I just started it on my own. I had read a lot about some of the amazing Silicon Valley successes business-wise, and I decided for myself at that point in time to just apply that concept in social impact land. And I haven't looked back.
Good. And, you know, that's just it. It really is about finding something that you believe in and following it, whether it be a vocation in life, whether it be something like this. I mean, Billy, like he was saying before the show, his decision to start Radical Empathy, and like he said numerous times on here sharing his story, that came from personal experience with the world of human trafficking.
Sure.
And a personal run-in with it where it was like, wow, this was right there, and I had no idea. And now his mission in life is to wake people up. You know, and it's hard when you come up with a when you finally find that you have a vision and that you want to take those steps, you want to start moving in that direction to sharing it with the world, Elizabeth. A minute ago, you made a very important distinction that I try to make to people regularly, and that is that of a not-for-profit. A nonprofit. You want to go into that real quick, just before we start delving into anything else?
Yeah, I'm gonna form this in a phrase this in a form of a question.
Yes.
So a lot of people ask me, you know, why did you decide to be a nonprofit? You know, why can't I invest in your company? I hear that constantly, and I try to explain to people that there's a difference between nonprofit doesn't mean not making money. You know, it just means you can't. You can't take the money out of it and basically pocket it and, you know, that kind of thing. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems to me to be the basic thing that a quote, regular person could understand. You can make profit, you make quote, profit, but it stays inside of the organization. And it has a different name than most people would expect.
Yes. And that person that came to you and said, you know, why can't I invest in you? And the answer to them is they can definitely invest in you in the social work that you're doing, but they can't expect a financial dividend back.
That's
because
right.
that's the difference. And that's why I like to sit down with clients when they're in what I call and what's commonly referred to as ideation stage.
Right.
To really think about what the social impact goal they have is and whether or not they have funders at the ready to fund it, whether that's corporate donors, whether that's individuals, whether they have access to government grants, or whether they have a committed group of people who are going to get those supporters for them. And if there isn't a base by which you can look to get the funding, I ask people to consider whether or not they can actually create a for-profit company that can bring a service or product to the marketplace. And when you do that, you don't have to compete for donations. Instead, you are bringing, as I've said, a service or a product to the marketplace. What you're doing there is you're charging more than the marketplace would require. And the extra profits that you're creating aren't just for yourselves. They can be, in part. You can take profit. You can have investors. You can have shareholders. But you're also doing something else. Essentially, you have a second bottom line. And today, when I talk to clients, I ask them to consider both options, because as more and more not-for-profits get created, as there seems to be more and more concentration of wealth, and when political winds shift, you don't want to leave your cause, because as sometimes happens in an organization, you've had one person who is the financial backer for most of the organization's history, and that person passes away. And they don't leave a bequest or a gift in their will to ensure that the finances continue. And that organization can just stop. In other times, you have bad control in a small or even a single person's hands, because they're the one funding the organization. And they're going to bully the person who's leading that not-for-profit to push the agenda in a certain way. And it makes it very hard. You have something that we call mission creep occur. Other times, you are working with partnership in the government, whether that's the municipality, locally, whether you're looking at state, federal, or a combination, but someone comes in or out of an election. And this isn't a left or right issue, because there are causes that are important to conservatives, there are causes that are important to liberals, and in between. And what you don't want to do is have your cause be a victim of a political shift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
I'm well aware of that one, where I said.
Yeah, absolutely, because Billy is... especially in a cause that will get guaranteed caught up in a political shift, because how many times have we spoken to the fact of the misunderstanding of the term human trafficking?
Yeah.
And the difference between that and drug trafficking, the difference between smuggling, that and smuggling, everything else.
One would think that this is a nonpartisan issue.
Oh, no.
Because it really is. But when it gets into politics, you have people that are arguing over funding, where the funding should go, whether the funding should follow this particular wind, I suppose. There's not just one mindset when it comes to trafficking. You have people that are, let's just say they have one particular belief system that is going to drive the decisions that they make. And then there are people that have other belief systems that are going to drive those. I try to stick in the domestic minor sex trafficking where nobody can really argue about it. But when money starts getting allocated and where it goes, it is highly political.
May be what I call political with a lowercase p. So it may not just be a Republican-Democrat issue. It may be that there's someone who runs an organization that has a particular vision, and she may have a close relationship with someone in power. And so that lowercase p, the politics of the relationship, sometimes outlasts the work that's being done. You may be doing some incredible work that you may be doing more efficiently to a wider base, but you're being left out of that space. And this, you know, this doesn't just happen in government. It also happens with the corporations. It also can happen with larger donors.
Yeah, it's like
a favorite.
It's like a grant that's a request for proposal. It's already been written specifically for an organization that already exists, and there's no chance that you're going to get it because you don't have their exact features. And that's just not, like you said, it's not just politics. That's everything. If somebody's trying to try to get a contract, it's the same thing as a grant. But yes, that stuff happens. There are people that are related to one another. There are people that somebody's getting their back scratched somewhere. And I don't know that this is the case, but in particular, my representative, he likes to send money down to the border. So the money gets allocated and they send it down to Homeland Security instead of spending it on what I would prefer, which would be prevention education, instead of trying to help the federal government stop people from smuggling people over the border. So I have my concerns about how that money gets spent. Ultimately, the only thing that I care about is that people get help. And I don't think the right people are getting help in those particular cases. But here's the thing. I can't be political. I don't care about it as much as just getting the job done. I'm working on prevention education, period. That's it.
Mm-hmm. And when you say you can't be political, it's part of it, I think, is you're talking about it in terms of you'll partner with anyone that will help you work to solve this problem.
You got it.
The other part of it you may also be referring to, and if you're not, it may be worth mentioning for listeners who are thinking of starting their own not-for-profit and they want it to be 501c3 tax exempt, federally tax exempt,
right,
is that you're limited in what quote-unquote political work you can do. You're prevented from doing significant lobbying.
That's right.
And you really need to be careful if you're running a not-for-profit and you have strong political opinions to make sure that the public doesn't think when you're sharing something, whether it's on Facebook or by a megaphone out on the street, that you're not representing the agency that you've created or are working for.
Absolutely.
You really need to be careful about that.
Yeah, I'm as careful as I can be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've actually highly considered bringing back the old disclaimer. Dudes and Beer used to actively start with a disclaimer, and that was like even before we had sponsors. It was just one of those forward-looking things, being a person for broadcast. It was like, this is going to be a highly opinionated show. We're going to be talking about a lot of things that some sponsors may not like, but conversations that I think need to be happening.
Mm-hmm.
So we really need to differentiate the fact that our guests, that this is their opinion, that if we have a flat earther on,
right,
it's because, hey, you know, until like the 1500s, you were burned at the stake if you said the earth was round. So let's have a conversation about that. You know, TCBY yogurt up the street who gives me $50 a month may not be into that conversation. But that disclaimer is what helps with that.
I wanted to say one thing before we jumped completely off the topic of what to say and what not to say. I am highly vocal online, but when I talk about trafficking, I am extremely cautious about what I post.
Yes, you
because
are.
Because I never want to cause some sort of row that would affect what Radical Empathy is trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
I'm frustrated by the situation, and I will let my frustration be seen. But when it comes to trying to point out problems or misunderstandings, et cetera, that's just ridiculous. That's just, I mean, I can't, it would be divisive for me to do that, and it would not help anybody.
Yeah, it would be counterproductive and quite frankly, unprofessional. And I think some people think that, and I don't know if it's more or we just see it happening more today because of some of the negative parts of social media, where people feel that this is a forum for them to be really nasty and mean because they're sort of hiding behind keyboards, these keyboard warriors. And people don't think that there isn't a consequence of speech, and people misuse the term free speech all the time, thinking that, you know, they're guaranteed to not have consequences to the words that they say. No. And there are consequences to your words, just like your actions. And before we go on to anything else, I just want to thank you for having this podcast, not just on this topic, which is obviously important to me, but to have a forum where you are open to having people with very different points of view, because I feel, and this is a sad thing that I've seen happen more and more, that people aren't interested in hearing people who they may disagree with. And I think it's so important for people to have that space, to be able to do that, because we need to return civility, and we need to be able to engage with people who we don't agree with.
A continual media echo chamber where you only bring on people that you believe in, believe the same way.
Yeah, no, precisely. And how many times, Billy, how many times have you and I disagreed on this show?
A lot, like, hopefully.
Eye to eye.
I hope more.
Over drinks, you know? Yeah. But still at the end of it been like, but this is the important thing, is the discussion.
Yeah, that's right.
And just the fact that you don't want to have an uncomfortable discussion about human trafficking or, you know, I don't care. Aliens. Doesn't matter. If you don't want to sit and, like, have an open-minded discussion, you are actively the problem.
Well, you may just learn something.
The mantra of this show.
You might learn something if you say something that you've held into your head and you're like, oh, this is the first time I've said this out loud, you know, and then somebody might be able to go, hey, you know what, maybe you should think about that a different way.
And we can go into it real quick, Elizabeth, because before the show you were talking about your thesis. And it goes directly back to that, and just the pure lack of empathy that we have in society now. The fact that empathy is what lets you sit there and literally just hear somebody's story, absorb it, and look them in the eye and go, wow, that's interesting, and leave it at that. And not try to change their paradigm or try to down them for what they believe or why they believe it. And I think it really does go back to that root of lack of empathy in society.
And that's what we're trying to fight with all of these nonprofits. With these organizations and the people that are behind them are trying to make that difference so that I think it's kind of like a lever. So if you're someone that wants to do something, you can find a group that's already gotten started. You know, trying to start something on your own is like just, it's a mountain, you know. And luckily people like you are out here, you know, trying to help people climb those mountains.
Yeah, I've always been interested in an individual and a small group of people and what that idea can bring. And it's part of my own cynicism that I've had from a very early age, and I've developed and worked in different ways. And then I did work for a little bit, at least part-time as a student with the state government. I've worked internationally with other governments on different projects and programs. But I've always returned to an individual and a group with some ideas. And that's where I feel like I'm at my best, is to help somebody with an idea or a team with an idea, help bring that to fruition. It's my bias. It's for the small business owner. It's for the individual who wants to start, you know, her own nonprofit, and someone who has a business idea and he comes to me and brings different ideas. And it's not in replace of the larger ones. I did my undergraduate degree in psychology, and that's where I worked on this thesis of inducing empathy into a population to study that. But I also took a minor in anthropology, and I was trying to find, I knew the idea I wanted to do for the thesis, and I was just looking for the professor that would help take it on, and I was lucky. And Philip Kuzansky, who's a wonderful man, who didn't tell me until I graduated with distinction with the successful thesis that he didn't think my idea would work. And I remember him telling me that, and I was so grateful that he waited till I succeeded to tell me the level of doubt that he had for me. And I now mentor a lot of attorneys and attorneys in training and people thinking about going into this land and into social impact. And I think about that, and I try to keep and channel him sometimes when someone comes to me with an idea that I just think is so wackadoo, and realize that it is the energy of somebody with the idea with a passion that can do so much good work. And my job is not to snuff out that light. But to challenge them, to question them, I'm not going to hand over my very small checkbook and just have them, you know, write themselves any checks that they could get away with on something, but to really push them and challenge them. I do really love people starting up their own, but I love also the partnership, because one thing I don't like people to do is to think that they on their own can do everything, because you can't. You have to be working in community. You have to look for other supporters. Even here in the state of New York, if you want to start a not-for-profit, you need to have three people. You need three people that are going to be in that not-for-profit. And if
that's
you
awesome.
Want to be the executive director, you can't also be the chairperson of that. Someone else has to be. And that's something that happened relatively recently in New York. It's called the New York Revitalization Act that was passed for not-for-profits. And that act, you know, really looked at the potential for abuse of just one person being able to run their ship in their direction without having the level of accountability and community involved. And so as much as I love supporting, you know, an individual with an idea, I love the systems that we're creating to make sure that people are accountable, not only to themselves, but to the community. One other thing I'll say now, because I am still, you know, commandeering the microphone, is to say that, you know, there's an interesting thing I say to some of the young people that come to work for me, because most of them are pretty far left on the political spectrum.
I could see
and
that.
I tell them that the idea of actually creating a not-for-profit is right on the political spectrum.
Yeah.
Not right or wrong, but right in terms of conservatism. Because what you're arguing when you create a not-for-profit is that I and the group of people that I'm selecting to be involved with can do a better job than the government at this activity, so much so that we shouldn't be paying taxes to the government. We should be free from that. And then that's what tax exemption is. That's what a not-for-profit that receives 501c3 status is saying. And it's funny when I, you know, throw this line out that now ends up being sort of like a canned part of my orientation with them, because they're shocked eyes at that.
Oh, you
know, and it's a way to kind of challenge this concept of the middle path, that it's not all or nothing. It's what are the issues that we care about, and how can we bring social impact forward in a way that we can focus on solving the issue and not just, you know, keeping power in certain pockets, whether that's government or business.
I want that on the back of my business card now. Don't have like, I have my left business card and my right business card. And in my right business card, it will say, you can help me, you right-wing person. This, you're helping me because we're going to do it better than the government. And
that's
the left,
right.
The left-wing people, hey, you're gonna help.
You're going to help me. Yeah. You're going to help me like the government helps me.
Exactly.
Yes.
Whatever it takes, man, to get
the
across.
Audience is kidding aside. It's such a big part of
it's not a joke.
Thing,
it's
right?
Dead serious.
Yeah.
You know,
mm-hmm.
There's, you know, I was going to ask, the question I want to ultimately get to is, you know, if you have an idea, you know, where do you start? You know, everybody always wants to know that. But I'm like, you know, when you have those conversations with people at the very beginning, I mean, do you have not just the people that you're working with, but you also have that conversation with the people that come in that want to start a nonprofit?
I do. I ask them to think about what else is already happening. And why they need to create something new or different.
And that means
because
the private and that's private and public.
Go ahead.
I was just going to, excuse me for interrupting you. The when you ask them to kind of do a needs assessment or what's out in the marketplace, mm-hmm. you're asking them to look in the private sector, public sector, nonprofit sector, you know, straight up volunteers in your neighborhood. I mean, how wide do you get them to cast that net?
You know, I don't do it in a formalized way. I do say to you, though, never apologize for interrupting me. If you don't interrupt me, I'll just keep going.
Same here.
So, just so you know.
Welcome to my show.
Just, you know, the battery dies on everything and the plugs are out. But in terms of, you know, what I ask them to consider, one of the things I like them to do first, and I usually make this as part of a homework assignment, is their own personal plans. So when they see the vision of the work that they want to do, what role do they play? And it's not a judgment, Mike. So some person may be a serial entrepreneur and a serial social impact entrepreneur. You know, he may want to have six different ideas of not-for-profits, and he wants to get them started, you know, and then he wants to hire a team and then leave it. And that's okay, but I want to understand that from the get-go. Someone else may come to me and she may say, well, I have seen myself doing this work until I die. I never want to retire. And knowing that her sole income is important and what's the timeline by which she can go in that direction. someone else maybe somewhere in the middle, and they may say, well, this is my idea and my concept, but I don't want to do this forever. I see myself doing this for a few years. And then when that person comes to me, I want to say to them, we want to make sure you don't have what I call founder syndrome, right? And that's someone who sees, and this is something that I'm challenged with now at Good Counsel, because recently I decided that I would step off the official board as the founder of the organization, bring a client and leader onto the board so there's more representation there, and continue to volunteer and help the organization and never abandon it. You know, it's sure. A non-physical
baby,
file.
You help start
that
walking.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
One thing that I have challenged people to do when they do that initial needs assessment is, again, to start with themselves and to think about what their financial needs are in the short and long term. And so, for example, if I take myself as a case study and I say, well, you have a mortgage and you have credit card debt and you have personal things you want to be doing in your life and you have loans and you have all of these things, you have retirement that you're planning for, and there's a quality of life that you're happy with, and it fuels you in order to be able to do this other work for free. Well, that means you need to keep the day job, because if you abandon that other part of your income and only focus, then you're going to make that, whether it's a social impact for-profit company or it's a not-for-profit, it doesn't matter what the legal entity is that you've created, but you're putting all this pressure on it. It's almost like on a first date when you start to talk about your wedding and the names of your kids, right? You might be a bit premature there, and you want to make sure that you're not going to bring the entity and yourself into financial and other ruin because of it. You want to be really careful about the direction you want to go in. And sometimes it means working for another charity or another social impact company for a bit and learning it. So you may have a vision. You know, I've had a lot of people come to me that come and intern and volunteer with me because they want to one day start their own charity. And I love having them involved because they can see what it looks like on a day-to-day basis. Now, of course, the issues we face are different every day, and their charitable and other social impact goals are separate from mine, but they can see an example of opportunities and rooms for growth and see what it's like, because theory and academia and reading it in the book is so different from doing it in reality. And sometimes people don't actually like that reality, and it's not a judgment of them. It's better for them to learn earlier that there's other directions they may want to go in. And maybe they're ultimately going to be better suited to be a philanthropist and be the one donating or supporting or working in larger entities. Not everybody can handle startup life.
No, it is not easy, man. I have to admit that's probably the biggest part of my marriage that I am so entirely thankful for. Elizabeth, and that I tell people all the time, and I tell Amy all the time that I brag on her about, is the fact that, like, she has supported every wild hair that has come up. As Billy and I sit here, where behind him sits my Austin Hot Mods desk, that started, that was a pedal modification business that started because I was on broadcast 50 hours a week and Amy was teaching theater, and we saw each other about 2 hours a day. And it was like, I need something to do between 5 p.m. and midnight. You mind if I start a business? Now, mind you, I already had a business. Then after that, it was, let me start a podcast. Oh, this is fun. Let me start another podcast. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have a podcast now, and so does my buddy and my other buddy. We should start up a podcast network. You know what we should really do is start up an online university that helps people that want to start podcasts, start podcasts. Like, it just,
I'm lucky to be married to a
syndrome.
Woman who puts up with my stuff too.
I'm not lying. Like, I have the syndrome. When I see something there and a need that needs to be filled in an industry, I can't not do something about it if I am passionate about that industry.
So as a person that's running a nonprofit doing everything wrong like myself, what are the things that you see people are doing wrong that they could easily fix? Ooh.
So I'll quickly go over some of the startup ones and then talk about some of the more established ones.
All right.
So
cool.
The startup issues are this is my free advice from you right now.
I'm running the clock on you. Let's see what you got.
Okay. Thanks. So are you the right person for this? And do you have the right team together? is this the right team and is the need real and here and now? And so sometimes people just have an idea and they want to be in control of something and they want to start it without thinking through those things. And as a result, sometimes they create a company when it should have been a not-for-profit or a non-for-profit when they should have done a for-profit company. And sometimes they are not thinking about how it's actually going to be sustainable. And financial sustainability is vital, regardless of whether it's for-profit or not-for-profit. You need to find out how it's going to be funded and how it's going to be able to continue. Even if it's primarily volunteer-driven, how are you going to organize those volunteers? How are the not necessarily only financial resources, but human resources going to be actively used and committed and to continue? So those are some of the startup things that come to mind. Mm-hmm. But when people actually get themselves started, and so for the purposes of this conversation, let me just talk a little bit about the not-for-profit. You have compliance. So you have had to make a decision about what state you want to be focused in and then whether or not you want to become a 501c3 tax exempt. And so, you know, let's talk about the state choice. You might be choosing because it's a state you're living in, and you might be choosing that because that's where the needs are. And you may have a vision for your organization to ultimately become national. And as you grow the organization, you need to think strategically about what states you're going to be working in, because you need to get permission in each state that you're active in, whether you're active in fundraising only, where you're just going in and asking people to financially support your work, or you're also running programs. There's different rules and regulations in each state that you're working in. Of course, then you have compliance issues with the IRS in terms of your annual reporting. Hmm. You also have obligations to register depending on what type of business you're doing, not-for-profit organization you're running. So if you're starting something that is going to have implications because you're starting a not-for-profit nursing home, well, there's different registration that's required. If you're starting a school, all of these different things have rules and regulations around them in terms of what kind of licenses might be important. Once all that's settled, I think it's important to make sure you're also thinking about the name, because you want to have a name that's unique, that is going to have a positive impact with your support base, that's memorable. And as I learned the hard way, it was easy to spell. Mm. People can't spell council.
Yeah. No. Yes. No, don't
they,
ever
they,
use
they
a number.
They mishear it. They think not it's the other council. They get confused. They
not within the terms of legal
counsel.
No.
Yeah. You know, it should have been stone soup, because those two words, I think, are easy to spell and easy to pronounce and in some ways easier to remember. But you do want to think about the name, and you want to think about the intellectual property, whether you want to trademark that name, whether you want to have a logo that's unique to you that you also want to trademark, or if you want to do a combination of the words and the symbol. And then think about some of the other intellectual property things. So I work with a number of clients that have incredible tech ideas that they need to make sure they preserve. They need to get patents for it. A patent can be very expensive, but so important to make sure you're protecting your intellectual property. Other clients create curriculum, and they want to make sure that if they go in and they teach a class, that someone can't just take those materials, photocopy them, and start teaching that class. So you want to make sure that your intellectual property is created, remembering importantly that ideas are not copyrightable. And that's something that people get really stuck up on. They think that they have this great idea. Well, good for you. We all have great ideas.
I'm going to put a pause in there. Is that okay? You said I have to interrupt you. So as a person who has started three businesses, I've generated intellectual property for other people, and I'm not using this as even the nonprofit stuff. What the first thought that I have is, dang, you sure are talking like this is a business. So when I talk to a lot of people that want to start a nonprofit, they're not thinking, you know, hey, I need a lawyer. I've got to do IP work. I've got to talk about, you know, trademark, patent, copyright. Those words don't even mean things to anybody. And you're going really quickly, which is great for somebody that's going to rewind this thing a bunch. But what kind of, just to stop right there, what kind of feedback do you get from people that are coming in there and you hit them with all that stuff right off the bat?
Yeah. At what point do you see the shark eyes happen? Because I teach people technology all day, and I see it typically within about a minute and a half, you can see the glaze start forming. Yeah. But whenever I start explaining to people, even like DBA, LLC, what to do with yourself as an independent technician, all that, like, Oh, the eyes just start rolling back so fast. And with this, there is so much more.
It's just going to work magically?
Yeah, yeah. Can it just be a show, man?
So this, I think there's two parts of it. One is I try to only work with clients who are ready to pick to put on their big girl pants, right?
There you go.
But this isn't just like, this isn't having four beers, right? This is having a beer or two, right? This is we have work to do and we need to get it done.
This is 3-day long wedding marathon drinking is what this is.
Yeah.
and I want people to make sure that they're ready. I mean, if they want to just talk about the world they want to live in, fine. They take a philosophy class, write a poem about it, you know, hold a sign, have whatever you want to do. But if you're really ready to get the work done, it's work. And you need to think strategically and you need to bring the best of the business mind together to do the social impact work. And so I try to be really careful on my clients and who I choose. But the real answer to that question is I really try to work with either one person at a time where I can make eye contact with them, where I can see and let them lead the conversation and really ask them a lot of questions so I understand what their goals are and how I can give them advice. Right now, it's kind of hard to answer, well, every single person who wants to start something, what are the things they need to consider? Well, the answer is it depends. And, you know, that doesn't make for a great podcast to just say that. It depends. You know, there's some areas that we want to get into. Yeah. But what I tend to do is I use visuals a lot, and I also record things and then share those recordings with people so that they can listen to it on their own and go back and ask me questions. And I send them materials. Part of the goal of Good Counsel Services is to actually create not quite a curriculum, but a lot of resources that people can share. And right now I'm super happy to share that there is a for-profit company that started a not-for-profit called The Lonely Entrepreneur. And they recently were introduced to us by a man named Ford Seaman, who's the founder of Forest Founders, which is a not-for-profit. And he's also the partner that I have with Righteous Causes. He made this introduction to Lonely Entrepreneur to some of our clients. And what Lonely Entrepreneur has is a lot of online lectures and a lot of written materials. And this is very similar to some of the things we want to be doing at Good Counsel Services, because a social impact entrepreneur is similar to a traditional entrepreneur. And the joke that's made so often is, an entrepreneur is somebody willing to work 100 hours a week to avoid working 40. and thanks. Insert laugh there. I saw that the in your studio, the laugh light lit up, so I appreciate that. But it's really true, and you want to make sure that people are ready to do that work, but also that they can self-educate. Because maybe something isn't an issue for them. So, for example, if you're not doing tech, you don't need to worry about patents. If you're not creating a curriculum and you don't have anything intellectual property-wise that you really need to protect, other than making sure people can spell the name of your organization, you know, not everything always applies, but you actually want to take that time, especially at the beginning, to ask yourself those questions so that you can be preventative. I like to make the reference about our work as being prophylactic, because I would prefer someone come to me with their ideas, and so I can tell them some of the things that they might want to consider before they call me in a crisis. One of the things that's horrible about being an attorney is you hear from people most often when they're in a crisis. And it can be like the phone rings and you're like, oh my gosh, do I really want to take this? And that happens not just in general law, where you can see it happening. Just so everyone knows, I don't do criminal. So when you know, there's some, I think there's actually a great criminal attorney that you're associated with.
Absolutely.
In Texas. She's fabulous. Everyone should go to her and stay away from me. what is her name? I follow her on social media.
J.L. Carpenter.
I find her awesome.
J.L. Carpenter. J.L. Yeah, Carpenter Law and Associates.
Mm-hmm. So if you get arrested, call her. Call Carpenter.
Call Jay.
Not Good Counsel. But even in the starting up the business, whether it's a not-for-profit or the for-profit, mm-hmm. I do like people to think a little bit more long-term so they can really think about how their social impact can happen.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that happens often is as they grow, someone hires people to do some part-time work. And then they, you know, have a little bit more money and they're doing more and more with that person. And what happens is they've actually created an employee relationship with someone.
Yeah.
And that can be wonderful, but it can be legally dangerous. because you want to make sure that if you are controlling the person's work, right, and that's really the way the government looks at it, the level of control
yep.
that the employer has over the individual, then it's no longer an independent contractor, and right. there are tax consequences to that, and there are obligations. And you want to make sure that you didn't accidentally create an employee relationship where you yep. only intended someone to be working as a contractor.
Yeah, and I mean, and like, I had to learn these things myself, having my own business, doing labor calls, things like that, and distinguishing the fact for my clientele that I use independent contractors. I use independent contractors. None of these people are my employees. I use independent contractors. But that means I also have to remember the fact that, like, I can give them a tight suggestion of when to be there.
Yeah.
Yes, and a tight suggestion on what to do and how to do it.
That's right.
I have two people that do some work with me at Terrador on a relatively regular basis. And, you know, one of them, I had brought something to her, and it was regarding social media. And I said, how are you with social media? And are you interested in maybe helping us grow? Because at the time, we were trying to grow our Facebook and try to look at, like, what Instagram could look like for us. And she was just very honest with me. She says, not only am I not good at it, but it's not something I'm interested in. And so I just kind of nodded and smiled and was like, okay, because I realized that I can't make her do it. You know, not that you would make your employee do it,
right.
but with an employee relationship, you have more flexibility in terms of what the job description is and what it can be.
Yeah.
When you're hiring someone who's an independent contractor, something that's out of scope doesn't necessarily become in scope because some of your own things have changed internally.
Scheduling,
we have an amazing event that we're planning to run on May 2nd here in the city. We're at the Park Avenue Synagogue. We have this amazing woman, Dr. Day, who's coming to talk to us, and it's our gala luncheon. It's geared towards women, but open to all. And I'm so excited about the event and all the planning around it. But my bookkeeper, who's an independent contractor, let me know that he and his wife will be going to Morocco for 10 days before the event, when I'm, like, getting in all the money, and there's nothing I can do about it other than, you know, cry in my office, say in my head, I guess, the wall, and come up with another plan.
Right.
And you know, earlier I talked about the founder syndrome, and I think the founder syndrome is something that I always ask my clients as they're growing, is, like, be honest with yourself, because if you lie to me and to yourself, it's only going to make it worse. And I have a client who's so amazing because she knew herself. And when I was saying to her, I don't know if you can afford employees yet, she's like, I have to because I know what it is. They're representing me and my organization, and I want to know when they're showing up and what they're doing. And even though she was only paying people to do, I think, maybe between 5 and 20 hours a week, I was like, why would you want them to be an employee? That's silly. She knew that she needed them to be an employee because she needed to not make a suggestion on when they were showing up and not be making a suggestion on how they would be delivering the curriculum that she had created.
Mm.
And I thought it was amazing. She's a relatively young woman, and I was amazed and inspired by how she wasn't in denial about herself, right? Well, and how she wanted to create the organization.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you really do have to have these steps thought out very well. We have about 10 minutes left, oddly enough, with our audience in the Hudson Valley up on WMLD. The show continues after that. We would love to continue having you on and keep talking about this if you have the availability this evening, Elizabeth. But I know that Billy had another question here. He had his hand up anxiously as you were speaking. It shot up like a rocket. So let's get to Billy's question here real quick.
So, thanks, Chris. I appreciate you making that aware, that or make everybody aware that I have my hand up. I do that all the time.
That's all right, buddy. That used to be the rules in the old studio. Whenever we had four or five people around the table, was if someone's talking and you have something to say, just raise your
hand. Sometimes I have to hold my hand over my mouth because I just want to break right in.
You've got to break in with me.
I know.
I keep going.
That's good. I waited until you took a breath. But you're mentioning about having essentially volunteers, and you're also talking about having, you know, people that are on staff and people that are contracting and all these things. So I'm constantly asked, why don't I just go get some unpaid interns, or why don't I get some volunteers, or why don't I get this, why don't I get that? Because oftentimes I'm trying to lift something that's giant, and it really would be helpful if I had some other people around. So the question that's on everybody's mind, not just mine, if you're running a nonprofit, how do you get those extra bodies that can do those lifts? And is it legal? And how can you find a way to make it legal? And I'll give you just a short example. I've had some people that are like, oh, just go get yourself some unpaid interns from some from universities. So I contacted University of Texas and checked in their internship program, and they told me the same thing everybody else does, which is, of course, what I tell people. It's like, you can't get unpaid interns, not legally. You might be able to get somebody doing an apprenticeship, but that's got to be linked to a college or a course or something like that. So my question is this. I'm going to try to make it as simple as possible. Where do I get that free work?
You got 10
so
minutes.
So the short answer is you get what you pay for. You can't get free work. Okay.
What was that last thing you said? You get what you pay for, which is, of course, that's the real answer. You said something else right after that.
Mm-hmm. So you can use volunteers for a not-for-profit. You can use volunteers in a lot of different ways. But what you need to ensure is that it's not job replacement. So the concept of doing free work is actually in violation of most state, but definitely federal rules about it.
Yep.
Now, I haven't seen cases where the federal government has pursued actions against a not-for-profit for using volunteers, because and it's something that really annoys me as an attorney, because I think we should have fewer rules and apply them, right, consistently. That's my philosophy.
Yes. Yeah.
And so this is this federal system on it, and I have brought it to many other attorneys and other people that work in employment law, and like I just really hate the fact that there are these rules preventing people from being able to legally take on volunteers that would be job replacement. Yeah. I don't think it's fair. I know a little bit about the history, because when I was researching this, I read it, and I understand the history. Is there was potential for a lot of abuse of people who for free. And it was and continues to be a challenge. So you definitely cannot do it for a for-profit. So when I talked about some of those social impact companies, you can't be having someone volunteer. A group of women came to me a couple years ago because they were part of a quasi-religious organization, and they had started a for-profit company that was selling like essential oils and other products, and they wanted people to volunteer, and we had problems. So you have to be really careful, because you cannot be volunteering for a for-profit business. You can, however, have internships. And so I want to talk about that for a couple minutes. I want to give my own disclaimer, which is my sharing of information right now is not creating any kind of a client-attorney relationship with either of you two or of anyone that happens to be listening.
Correct. Correct.
But in general, I can talk, can speak conceptually that about that there are a list of criteria and best practices that are shared by the federal government on internships, and also in most states. I know at least New York, because that's the state I work in most often. And essentially, what they want to ensure is that the interns are getting meaningful training experiences. And so if you're bored or a group of people say to you, we'll get free labor, you have to explain to them that is not a legal answer. That can be handled. What you can do is you can provide meaningful work experiences for young people that are either getting credit at school, getting paid. A lot of times other grants pay it. You don't have to pay an intern. You can have an unpaid intern, but you need to make sure that the focus of their work with you is on their own learning. And that can be a mixed bag. So just like that young woman I said who knew herself and knew that as a founder of the organization, she knew exactly what she wanted, when she wanted. So she couldn't play around in independent contractor land. She had to go right into employees.
Yep.
Well, if you are someone who doesn't enjoy sharing and teaching and providing real life experiences and mentoring people, then do not take an intern.
That's right.
Got that right.
Because it is not an employee. And if you treat that intern like an employee, that intern should call me and we should sue you. Okay? Because it's not an employee. That being said, I would not be able to be a part of the amazing work that we do at Good Counsel Services if we did not have the interns that we use. They are amazing. I talk to them about the fact that, of course, they're never going to practice law unauthorized, because then they won't be able to become attorneys and all of my bar admittances get taken away. So we're not practicing law unauthorized, but that doesn't mean that today when we had an asylum client and that we were meeting with, that I left to take another call and I had the intern, who's a volunteer, who's in from Taiwan over an 8-week period. She was working with our client. She was working with our client during a practice interview. She was playing the role of the judge, that when we go to immigration court, the client has different experiences to practice from. They recorded it so I could watch it later. So she was having meaningful experiences. She was definitely learning, but the client experience of being able to talk to somebody other than me, the lawyer that they've been working with for over a year, was amazing. If I had to pay somebody to come in or pay another attorney or pay someone, it would have been more than the client could afford, more than the not-for-profit could afford to do. So this volunteer and this intern has done an incredible work for us. That's a value add. But I always have to ensure that any focus of any of our interns, whether they're doing externships for credit in their law school or undergraduate or graduate school, or whether they're doing it purely for their own edification and they're funding it on their own. I mean, I have students that come from around the world who actually pay third parties to come to vet our organization, to come and work for us for free. So they're literally paying like $10,000 to come to the United States, to come to New York, to work, to live, and to get that experience. And that's completely legal, right? But the focus and part of why we end up getting some of the best interns, I think, that these agencies have to offer is because we give back to them so much. And that's not just me as an individual. That's part of the work that we do. We've actually been able to get grants. So I'll throw out a couple plugs for two of our funders. So TD America has given us in the past a $1,000 grant, and a lot of not-for-profits are eligible if you're living and working in an area where the bank is operating. You can apply for up to $1,000 for not-for-profit education. And so what we were able to do is myself, another recent law graduate, and a student were able to go to a conference that was put on for lawyers working in not-for-profit. And it was $1,000, and we were able to go, and it paid for our most of our admission. We got scholarships for part of the others from the agency. We also were able to get a $7,500 grant from Santander Bank, and that was purely for our internship program. So if you do it well enough, there's actually workforce development grants that you can look at.
Well, and let's get into a little bit of that, and we'll deep dive into some of the ways that 501c3s like Radical Empathy Education Foundation, things like that, can actively take advantage of the legal help that places like Good Counsel provide, and especially with funding with places like, oh, my Lord, I just lost it. My webpage went away. I'm so sorry. Righteous Causes, Inc. So if you can, just hold the line real quick. We are signing off to our WMLD audience. Thank you so much, everybody. Continue to take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and remember, if you can't be good at it. So continuing on here, Elizabeth, going a little bit deeper into how people who have already kind of started their legwork, I mean, one of my big questions I always ask people is, because people come to me with my podcast business and with my consultation business at various stages as well. And my first intent with them always is, do you want to make money with your show or do you not want to make money? What's your intent? And really the question comes down to, like, at what point do you need to contact someone like yourself, someone like Good Counsel? If you were really looking to, if you've already started most of the legwork for your nonprofit, things like that, at what point do you need to bring legal representation into the fold?
So I think that if you know the social impact that you want to do, that you have done your research to see that the community you want to do it in needs it and is ready for it, and no one else is doing it, so there isn't that kind of work already being handled and handled well by other folks, and you know that you have the financial resources at least to fund it yourself, or to get, you know, an angel to come in to help you at the beginning, or to work with someone else, that it's around the incorporation time. I really don't encourage people to incorporate without talking to an attorney, because they want to make sure that they're getting the right forms in and doing it in the right state, in the right order. And I think that's an early thing to have done. And in terms of being able to afford it, I would be doing a disservice to Good Counsel Services to not talk about what we do. We work with clients in three different ways. We take clients in a cohort, so people can apply to us, and that would be for somebody who would want to start in either January or July. They would send to us a really short application of what they are, what their needs are, and what we do is, depending on that social impact leader and the team and the goal and whether or not we have the bandwidth to actually do the work, we take them on and give them up to 5 hours completely pro bono. And we do that because we want to try out on different organizations, the way that we work, because it's not a fit for everybody. We're holistic in the way we deliver services. We don't only handle the legal needs. We also talk about marketing. Well, we can do a trademark for your name, but is the name a good fit? And what are you doing with your accounting, and what's your cash flow like? And some people don't want that, and that's okay, and that may not be a fit for them. We also prioritize the work that we're doing with young people, so that means that very likely I'm going to ask that an intern be a part of the call, that the intern be corresponding with you. And making sure that you understand that the work that we're giving to you is also giving back to the students and volunteers and the wider community. And so we do that on a pro bono basis completely. And then we also have been applying for and now looking to get grants for people who need some more in-depth work but aren't able to yet afford to do that more. And then we have what I call a low bono rate. So depending on the need, we either do a flat fee that we like to calculate to be around either $100 or $200 an hour, ultimately. And that's for entities that have income coming in, that's regular. We don't want anyone, and we do like different kind of zero-interest payment plans and things like that. But what we want organizations to consider as they grow is having money set aside for the protection of the work that they're doing. So that's for the accounting and the marketing and the financial resource development, because we want to make sure that they're going to be sustainable. And so that's how we work. Now, fortunately now, we also have partnerships with different law schools. So we have clinics and students that are coming to us to help do the work. And this year and last year, we've been able to create and grow partnerships with a few of the big-name law firms. And the one that we work with most often, and we just had a call with them on Friday, the Paul Hastings Law Firm, which is a very large global law firm. They've given us over 1,000 hours of their lawyer's time.
Oh, wow.
Dang.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's no
joke.
For
free, right? So that's matching. So we make sure that when their attorneys are working with our clients, that we usually have an intern or volunteer also engaging there to make sure that we're not thinking about law as only a zero-sum game, because, again, we're social impact attorneys focused on how we can solve social issues, not only zealously represent the interests of a client. And if you're coming from a corporate law experience, your training is often very different from a more holistic way of looking at it. But we're so grateful for that partnership, because that's literally millions of dollars of legal fees that none of our clients, and we definitely can't afford. Yeah. And we're looking to amplify that work by working with other law firms as well. But the model that Paul Hastings and we have developed and nurtured has been incredible, because that's how people work with us. And I think that's something people should do. Now, there are some great law firms that focus on their private law firms that focus on not-for-profit, and they do incredible work. But again, that's for organizations likely that either have someone who's funding them, or they get a grant for legal, or they're a little bit more established financially already because they've been in business for a few years and they can afford to be paying more market prices.
Yeah, and it really does. I mean, as a business owner myself, I took care of my own LLC documentation, things like that. And man, it is such a daunting task. It is so incredibly detailed to go through all that stuff. And I mean,
and it's
granted,
lonely when you're sitting in the middle of the night reading those documents.
Granted, LLC is a different, little bit different story than full-on incorporation, and with starting a 501c3 especially. But it can be such a discouraging process sometimes whenever you're trying to find information. How do people go about getting in touch with you at Good Counsel? How do people go about actively becoming part of that process?
I'm actually on the website right now.
How do they get onboarded? I knew I shouldn't have given you that tablet.
Uh-huh. I'm looking. Mm-hmm. I want to apply. Yeah,
so what is their user? What is their user experience like, Billy?
The easiest way, you know, to get us if you're online, and that's simply Good Counsel Inc. And counsel is spelled C-O-U-N-S-E-L, and it's INC, incorporated.org.
So it's
goodcounselinc.org. We're also on Facebook as Good Counsel Services, and you can find us there, and we respond pretty quickly to that. And our direct line is 718-598-3481.
Awesome. So I'm looking into the
cohort
program.
And then you can also
email me.
Directly. And so I'm Elizabeth at goodcounselinc.org.
So I'm looking at the cohort program. You're mentioning that there's one at the beginning of the year and the middle of the year. And I'm trying to figure out, how do I apply? So imagine that I was going to be the person actually doing this. Do I just contact someone at info@goodcounselinc.org? Or is there a specific... Okay, so that's the best place to start.
Yep, you share with us that you're interested, and we'll send you, there are just a few different questions for anyone who's listening that wants to do it right away. The only things we're currently looking for is the name of your entity that's not yet incorporated, the one person who will be the main contact, what you anticipate your legal needs to be, what your social impact work is, and why we should take you into the program. And we ask for these applications to be as short as possible, because we want to focus on doing the work, not on creating really in-depth grants.
So let me see if I got this. If
we
don't have
like a grant manager. We just take the applications. We'll usually do an interview with the people that are sending it along, and making sure that they understand what we're providing and what we're offering, and then we have a committee that actually runs the official application process.
Got it. So that helps me understand quite a bit. So really, the cohort program, as I understand it, is this is for someone that has not gotten started. They have an idea. They've basically vetted their stuff, and they come to you guys. They haven't been incorporated. They don't have their 501c3, but this is basically the, I wouldn't say bootstrapping or startup, but it's the bootstrapping startup part of a business, so they can actually, or sorry, a nonprofit that is a corporation as well, that needs to get started putting on their big girl pants. Is that how you had
exactly
it?
Yep. And I think that we don't limit the cohort program only to people who are at that startup phase, because we want to be able to provide social impact leaders regardless of where they are in their stage. We just don't turn people away because of their ability to pay. But we also don't turn away people who can pay, because we need you. It's just, is the idea workable, and what's your timeline? And so it can be people that have been in business for several years. I mean, I've done some really interesting work with an organization that was religiously affiliated, and they were based in New Jersey, but doing work in India. And they actually had a constitution that they had needed written for the organization. And that was really a fascinating project, but the entity had been around forever. They just hadn't created their own and wanted to create their own constitution. I had another group that had been around for very many years, and it was merging, and we worked on a merger with another organization for them. So we're not only working with the startup phase. I think that's probably where we're unique in our focus on startups. I don't see other organizations doing that work, but we don't close out people who have been around for a bit.
I also am noticing on your cohort program page, you have not just your current cohorts, but you have alumni, and I'm guessing that these alumni stay involved with the organization. So can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yep. So we, thanks for asking about that. One thing that we like to do is to create community, around social impact. And so someone, for example, we have a client that had done her intellectual property application for trademark solely on her own. She had attended a lecture we gave, and then decided that she could try to do this on her own, and she did. And once she had done it and was successful, she let us know how happy she was about the training we had done and the work that she had done. And when someone else came to us with a similar desire, to do their own trademark, we put them in touch so she could tell her, you know, lessons learned. And so we like to have people who are working on similar things later in time, or maybe they're working on similar issues and want introductions, or maybe they're working in different areas, but they can do referrals for people. We want to connect people because we don't see it as a zero-sum game. Right. And so when people go through our cohort and they essentially graduate from it, they can still continue to use us for a variety of different needs. And if they're a fit, then it really is a big win for us. Because they're able to become, in many cases, paying fees or memberships for us, which makes it partly financially sustainable for us. And for some that can graduate, the hope is that they can work with the for-profit benefit corporation that was created, Righteous Causes. And those are for ones that are now looking, if they're for-profit, they want investors, or they're looking for larger grants and they need help getting there. And that's a different application process. And it's really about the pitch. And with those clients, we want people who have great ideas, but we want to see that they've been tested a little bit. And so good counsel is sometimes like a starting ground, where if you're at ideation only, it's the best place for you to applying for that cohort.
Yeah, and, you know, let's go into Righteous Causes just a little bit as we move forward, because that is such an amazing program. I myself work a lot of corporate AV benefits, things like that. And to see that there is an organization like Righteous Causes, Inc. out there helping people to really spearhead different movements. Let's go into a little bit of, like you were just saying, the founding of Righteous Causes, how that kind of spawned out of Good Counsel, and exactly what you guys do.
Thanks. So I would love to actually bring the founder of the entity on and do a podcast with you another time, because I think
absolutely.
That would be really fabulous to have him talk about his vision and where it happened and sort of where we kind of came together on it. For me, it predated before the corporation was created by this client, who's now a friend and a business partner, because one of my interns, actually, McKenna Kaigunda, who does podcasts often for Good Counsel, actually, mostly on the topic of financial resource development.
Oh, wow.
She was studying business in Canada, and she came and she interned through a program with me. And when she would hear me talk and share my vision and what our goals were, and she said to me, "I think you're selling yourself short, right?" She said, "You're only focused on not-for-profit, but some of your clients are going to be financially successful on like a high level, and you should think about what it would mean to charge them more than your top rate." And I hadn't really thought that way, because it was like I didn't follow my own advice on how to make it financially sustainable. And here is this amazing young person, right, working for free, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I mean, getting very meaningful experiences that are helping her in her education, basically telling me, "Hey, put on your big girl pants and, like, start a real company." And so we even had a vision for some of the people that we wanted to be involved in it. And so when this client came to me, and I had said to him when he had created a not-for-profit before we had met, I said, "Are you sure that that's the right structure?" And I let him understand what a benefit corporation is. And I would love to do a whole topic with you and chat for-profit social impact companies and benefit corporations.
Oh, I want to talk about B Corps.
It's really something I'm very, very passionate about and love to share around. But just to focus on this topic.
Mm-hmm.
And what came out of it was this way that we could accelerate and expand the work we were doing, help bring some tech support to some of the businesses, because that's something that we don't provide at Good Counsel. So we can't create your website or help you really manage your data or do some of the tech solutions, but those are needs, especially as some of these entities are growing. Mm-hmm. And we want to be able to bring in investment for those that are looking for it. Because I have a handful of clients at Good Counsel that, in a sense, it's not that they outgrew us. It's just that the level of financial need and ability they have in terms of scale is strong and wide, and it's beyond the startup, and it's beyond what, like, I can do with a pro bono law firms or should be doing with pro bono law firms, right?
Yeah.
And also what the students are really able to do. It's really a more specific focus, and it's going to be more fee-based or equity-based. And that's one of the things we've considered doing is actually Righteous Causes taking equity in some of these companies that we want to support that are doing social impact work. And we see ourselves as definitely having a double bottom line, and that we want to, it's a for-profit entity, so it's not the not-for-profit that is the basis of our conversation tonight. It's definitely for-profit, but we don't think that you need to make a choice always between profits and people, that you can put people and community as a top value, and you don't have to necessarily give everything away for free, and it's not mutually exclusive.
So one of the things that I've found about nonprofits is they're always looking for alternative ways to, you know, make money. You know, one of those ways is through a B corporation where you can hopefully, you know, coordinate with a group that wants to, you know, basically help fund you out of their work. And another one is, is there maybe this isn't the right time to talk about it necessarily, but is there something that a nonprofit needs to know so they can actually try to get attached to a B Corp? I've found that it's been trying to work with some people, and it's been very difficult to jump through the B Corp hurdles. So I'm just curious, if I'm a nonprofit, how do I get connected?
I definitely think we should, if you are open to it, I'd love to do a talk on
totally
this topic.
Separate thing.
Yeah,
so
that's a lot. That's a really deep dive.
Yeah, I'll just share a couple minutes on it. One is this concept that not-for-profits have to be really careful about. It's called unrelated business income tax. You cannot create a business as a not-for-profit unrelated to your mission that's bringing you significant money without being taxed. And essentially you're being penalized in a sense for it. So you have to be very, very careful about the income you're bringing, because the federal government doesn't want to see you as a not-for-profit competing with for-profit businesses. And so even at Good Counsel, we need to really be careful about our mission and how much of our funding is coming from fee-for-service. Because if the federal government looks at us and says, wait a minute, you are running the same as a law firm, but you're charging less, because you're getting grants and you're competing against for-profit law firms that are working in this area. And if they see that we're running basically a consulting business, right, or a for-profit venture competition in a not-for-profit, they'll crack down on it. You have to be really careful about where you're getting those funds from.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, a general thing I want to warn people about, which is why I say, do you really need to be a not-for-profit? And one area that I'm working in is creating partnerships between not-for-profits and for-profits. So earlier I mentioned the wonderful scholarships that are being provided by the folks at Lonely Entrepreneur for us. Mm. And they, I believe, I haven't looked at their legal documents, but I know they are a for-profit venture, but they started a not-for-profit, I've been told. And you can work carefully in partnership with those two ventures. Now, if you're a not-for-profit, like, so if you're Radical Empathy and you're looking to do your incredible work in the community and in the world, but you want to partner with a for-profit company, you might want to choose one that basically adopts you as a charity. And that's very exciting and interesting. And then you don't want a lawyer to make sure you're getting the right income and they're not just using you to make their brand look good.
Ha! Yeah, there's right? that.
You want to take that. That's why, you know, earlier we were laughing about people's eyes glazing over. Well, you need to be an adult. You need to protect the interests of the cause that you're working for, right? And that's when you do definitely want to bring in an attorney when something like that's happening. But one thing that I'll just say, maybe it'll be one of the last things I'll say in terms of substantive, at least at this podcast, is the difference between a benefit corporation and B Corp. So there is a not-for-profit organization, B Labs, that has done a terrific job at creating the brand that people call like B Corps and certified B Corps. So that's that symbol B with a circle around it that a lot of people see.
Yep.
They do incredible, incredible work, but that's not necessarily a legal entity. You can be a limited liability company. You can be a benefit corporation, which is what Righteous Causes is, which is a legal entity. And you can be certified by this charity. It's almost like if something's kosher, right? And you have a certain seal by a kosher authority that your products that you're selling in your or your restaurant itself is kosher. It's almost a way that this not-for-profit has this B stamp that they put on it if you meet a certain level of what they declare to be important as you're running your business. But it's not a legal entity. So people use the word B Corp interchangeably with benefit corporation, but they're not the same thing.
So it's like it's an accreditation or a certification, but that has no teeth or regulation at all.
So accreditation, certification, even so they do say they're certified, but it's by the not-for-profit. It's not by any federal agency.
Wow.
Or state agency or government agency.
Let's just say that's hardly confusing at all.
Exactly. And I've gone through it a million times, and people's eyes glaze over it, and they still get it.
Well, I can tell you my
eyes
are...
Talk about it. When I'm teaching intellectual property, the not-for-profit and their leadership were amazing because they basically were... I don't know if it was intentional or not, but they were so good at getting their brand out there
they
even did a better job than, like, the government agencies. So, but I think there's so many different ways that we can do incredible work, and I don't mean that as a criticism. It's actually quite a compliment to the not-for-profit for them getting out there and doing that.
I'm really glad that you straightened me out on that, because I've been hearing B Corp and Benefit Corp interchangeably. So thank you for the education.
Yeah, Benefit Corporation is not yet in all 50 states, but it's like a for-profit company in that it can be publicly traded. It can go that large, but it has what we often call a double bottom line, and different states have rules around it. And people make different decisions on which state they want to incorporate in, depending on what the obligations maybe in particular states.
Interesting. Like I've always been fascinated by the literal structure of corporations and businesses, things like that, and the various differences between them. How does somebody figure out exactly what they need to be, be it their business, be it their 501c3? What have you, Elizabeth? How do you figure out, once you have this concept, how do you figure out your legal designation and which route you should go?
So one thing I like to think about is where is your funding going to come from? And so if you know that you're going to get a federal or a corporate or individual grants and supports, and that those people or individuals or entities are going to need you to be a 501c3, then your question's already been answered.
Yeah.
If you have a service or product that you feel you can bring to the marketplace because you're already running a business, but you want to do something else with it, like so I have clients working to decrease the occurrence of some of the horrible things that are happening around sex trafficking and human trafficking, but they are creating a cosmetic company, right? So that makes you, how is that connected? Well, the woman is originally from Europe, and she has strong connections in Switzerland, and her family has been in the cosmetic industry and world for a while, and she wanted to create a new brand and an organic financially for-profit company that was using sustainable products, but she wanted profits to go to help this population of people. And so for her, she already had her answer. She didn't need to rely on the government grants. And so I think that's the first question that you need to ask yourself in terms of where the funds are going to come from. In terms of like the magical, whether you want to be a benefit corporation or a limited liability company, I'm happy to come back and talk about some of those things and the pros and cons. It's more than I have bandwidth to do, tonight.
Yeah.
But I'm happy to share a little bit more about that, because there are certain things that tests you want to kind of give yourself about it and think it through and realize that unlike life and death, right, and a decision is you can change. You can start as one thing and open up something else. The one thing that I like to make sure people are cautioned around is you cannot start a not-for-profit and then, again, take any of those profits for an individual. You can't say, I want to go become a for-profit now, so I'm going to take all that money and start it. You can't do it that way.
Right.
You'd have to start anew with the company, and the funding would have to be different. But direction, you can change from a benefit corporation to a limited liability company. It's not necessarily easy, but it's doable.
Yeah, and it's such an involved process to go through all of this, to know that there are resources out there like Good Counsel, to know that there are great people out there like Righteous Causes, Inc., to help the entrepreneur, to help the people like Radical Empathy Education Foundation to help people like my brother who has a youth-based 501c3. It's fantastic to know that these resources exist, Elizabeth, and that there are people like you out there who make it their mission to make sure that they exist. One last time before we sign off to our audience for the evening, tell everybody where they can go for this legal counsel with Good Counsel, as well as how they can contact Righteous Causes, Inc.
Okay, great. So goodcounselinc.org is our website, and they can reach me directly at elizabeth@goodcounselinc.org. If they're looking to find out more about Righteous Causes, either as an investor or someone who's looking to be incubated in our work, that website is simply the letter rcauses.com. And if you're trying to reach me there, you can just do elizabeth@rcauses.com.
Fantastic. And Billy Joe Kane, let everybody know where they can go to find out more about the amazing VR technology behind Trapped, a VR detective story, behind the new curriculum that you guys have to help train police departments, hospitals, universities, schools, everything about the triggers involved with victims of human trafficking.
Thank you. So we are called Radical Empathy Education Foundation, and the acronym for that is REEF. So if you go to reefcares.org, reefcares.org, you will be able to find a good springboard for everything, whether you want to look at some videos that explain what we do, learn more about University of North Texas Health Science Center's medical department that's now using that to educate their medical students, or how to get it into a school or job training near you. It's reefcares.org.
Yeah, and to have seen you guys grow, to have seen you guys go through this process, that's, you know, what's hilarious, folks, is that when I first contacted Elizabeth, is a friend of my wife for a long time, and we're friends on social media, things like that, and I made a post about something, and I want to say the two of y'all started talking about it, and then she was like, you know what, I'm going to ask Elizabeth about it. And then Elizabeth and I started talking, and I was like, you know, I don't know why I've never thought about having you on my podcast to come on and talk about the important work you do with helping nonprofits. And the nonprofit work that you do, as well as introducing you to the nonprofits that I know who need this help, who have come up through these ranks, who have done this stuff and can see the fact that, like, my God, there is somebody out there to help those people coming up behind me.
Yeah.
So to have had both of y'all on this show tonight was truly a treat for me.
It's a blessing.
So
a true blessing.
Thank you guys for taking the time out of your schedules to come in, share what you're all about, share what the movement is all about, what it is to try and shake the foundations of people's, I guess, just stale reality, and try to make them understand that we can make a difference. We can make a difference. You don't have to have money to make a difference. You don't. Yeah, there are so many different ways that you can do things. So, Elizabeth, please do hold the line while we close things out. Billy, thank you so much for being here as always. While you were online checking out the great work of not only the Radical Empathy Education Foundation, as well as Karen Orr, Good Counsel, and Righteous Causes, Inc., make sure to stop on by dudesandbeer.com. That's where you can find all the episodes. That's where you can find the Knowledge Vault. Make sure to stop on by HC Universal. Till next time, everybody, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Can't be good. Be good at it. We'll talk to you soon.
The official Dudes and Beer app for Android and iDevices, available on Google Play and iTunes markets. For more episodes, content, and information, visit us online at dudesandbeer.com. You can also find our episodes on Breach.tv, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, SoundCloud, iTunes, YouTube, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast service. Dudes and Beer is a proud member of the HC Universal Network family of podcasts. For more about our sponsors and other podcasts on this network, visit hcuniversalnetwork.com. Thanks for listening, everybody. And until next time, drink responsibly.